Well, good morning, folks. Can anybody hear me? Everybody hear me over there? Okay. Anyhow, as he said, my name is Ray Youngin, and I'm from Salem, Oregon. I'm really glad to be here in the land of Timmy Hortons. Best coffee in the world, right? Right? No? I think it is. Anyhow, we're going to be looking at what I consider to be the religion of the tribulation period. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, Paul writes about this period called the Day of the Lord, which is the tribulation period. And he says, that day shall not come, except there come a falling away first, then the man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition. And he talks about the mystery of iniquity. How many of you have read that part? The mystery of iniquity. The man of sin. Now, you know what the man of sin does? How many can tell me what the man of sin does? He shows himself to be God. He shows himself to be God. Not a God. He doesn't show himself to be a God. He shows himself to be God. Now, how does he do that? Well, that's what we're going to look at this morning. How the man of sin, I believe, shows himself to be God, you know, in the context of the mystery of iniquity. Okay, in Revelation 9, verses 20 and 21, says, and the rest of the men which were not killed by these plagues, yet repented not of their work, the works of their hands, that they should not worship devils and idols of gold and silver and brass and stone and of wood, which neither can see nor hear nor walk. Neither repented they of their murders or of their sorceries. Now that's a key word here, sorceries. That means using the power of devils. Nor of their fornication, nor of their thefts. And that word, worship devils, means homage to demons. Homage to demons. And that's what we're going to be looking at over the next 3 days, is how the whole world, the whole Western world in particular, is starting to pay homage to demons. And even right here in Winkler, such activity is going on, I've been told. So we're going to look at how this is done. You know, homage to demons. In other words, you know, worshiping them, giving them your devotion and your love and your dedication, okay? Now, I have to apologize. A lot of the, or most of the information I have is geared toward, you know, American-type information, because for the last 2 years, almost all the talks I've given have been in California, mainly at Calvary Chapels. But I can start out with anecdotal evidence that this phenomenon also pertains to Canada. A couple of years ago, I was in Uptown Mall. Is that the big mall in Vancouver? Uptown? I think it is. And one of the biggest malls in Canada, and there was a Chapters bookstore there. And I think Chapters is the national chain for Canada. I went in there to research. I went to the religion section, and that was all New Age. I went to the health section, and that was all New Age. I went to the self-help section, a huge self-help section, and that was all New Age. And I came out of there, and then, of course, there was a New Age section. So I came out of Chapters Bookstore in Uptown Mall with the idea that the New Age was the religion of Canada. You know, if you went into that bookstore, you know, I'm not saying it is, but just by going into that bookstore, that's the opinion one would get. Well, anyhow, I'm going to show you some statistics. I hope you like statistics. Baylor University down in the States did this survey of religion. And like I said, what I'm about to show you really pertains to the whole Western world. And by the Western world, I mean Western Europe, U.S., Canada, Australia, New Zealand. You know, it kind of pertains to everybody in this kind of a culture. Okay, Baylor University survey found that 26 million people in the States viewed God as a cosmic force. Now, I assume practically everybody here is a Christian, right? And when we Christians pray, we pray our Father, right? Our Father who art in heaven, right? Now that assumes that we're praying to a personal being, right? A personal God. You know, a God that is an individual being. But what is a cosmic force? I mean, that sounds kind of like Star Wars. That sounds kind of like something out of comic books, right? A cosmic force. You know, a cosmic force is not a personal being. And this is where the contention is starting to come in. You know, is God a cosmic force or is God a personal being? You know, that we read in the Old Testament that, you know, it's an individual. You know, He gets angry, he gets sad, you know, he's loving, you know, it's a he, not an it. So anyhow, 26 million people view God as a cosmic force. You may think, well, that's not very many, but look at this. If 26 million people have a New Age view of God, that is more people that, you know, number Episcopalians, Lutherans, Presbyterians, United Methodists, and Seventh-day Adventists combined. So we're looking at a very big, very huge, and there's the numbers there that, you know, in parentheses, you know, so we're looking at a very large spiritual movement. We're not looking at something that's some small fringe movement that maybe 2 or 3% of the population is involved in. And it's growing very rapidly. It's not just, you know, hitting a plateau and then staying there. It's continuing to go up and up and up. And the law of the market. How many of you are in the business world or have had businesses and understand the law of the market? Okay, supply and demand. If there's a big demand for something, there's a big supply for it, right? You know, if somebody, a lot of people want to buy something, you provide a lot of it, right? You know, and if there's a small demand, then you don't have very much of it, right? That's the law of the market. Okay, in 1984, now this is when I first started researching the New Age, in 1984, and back then, when you would go into a mall, like Salem where I'm from, there was a mall there, and there was a national bookstore chain called B. Dalton, and you found them in most malls in the States. And the number of shelves devoted to New Age spirituality was five. Five shelves in 1984. Okay, now, Borders Bookstore, B. Dalton went out of business, and now the there's two national chains, Borders and Barnes and Noble. For some reason, national chains in the States always have a B in the name. Well, anyhow, Borders, there's a Borders in Salem where I'm from, and I research there a lot. And this is the New Age section now. It went from five shelves to, way in the end there, way on the other, towards the end of the other aisle, there's some books on Islam and Judaism, but most of that is New Age books. And also, on the other side, so that's the New Age section now, 60 shelves. 60 shelves is now devoted to New Age spirituality. You know, so it went from five in 1984 to 60 now. That's what I just said. Okay, witchcraft. In 1984, there were only one or two titles on witchcraft in national chain bookstores. You know, like these five shelves I talked about, you'd only find maybe one title on witchcraft. In 2011, there are now 200 to 300 titles on witchcraft in national chain bookstores. And this is in Borders. There's about 14 shelves now devoted to Wicca in Borders Bookstore. In 1984, there was only one title on Wicca or witchcraft. So it went from one title to 300 since then. Now, I would consider that to be very significant growth. Okay, this is another very surprising statistic. In 1984, there were no tarot cards or books about tarot cards in national chain bookstores. That would be totally ridiculous. See, tarot cards are what are called divination. You know, you've seen the gypsy fortune tellers, you know, like on the side of the road. Well, those are what are called, she uses tarot cards, and they're supposed to predict the future. And in 1984, you would not find tarot cards, which are part of the occult, in a regular bookstore. You'd have to go to a New Age bookstore, which there weren't very many of back then. Now, this is the number, they have a whole shelf devoted to tarot cards in Borders Bookstore, you know? Literally dozens of tarot card decks in bookstores. So this shows that interest in the occult, you know, witchcraft and things of the occult, is skyrocketing, you know, skyrocketing all over the Western world. Okay, New Age magazines, okay, these are all New Age magazines in Borders Bookstore. And ironically, you won't find hardly any Christian magazines. You know, and this is a good example, okay? You see that? Spirituality, New Age. See it? Spirituality, New Age. Okay, there's no spirituality Christian. You know, when it says spirituality, all there is New Age. Now, that means that the people that run Borders Bookstore, when they think of spirituality, they now think of Eastern religion and Wicca and things like that. They think of the occult. You know, they don't think of Christianity. Now, 30, 40 years ago, it would be the other way around. You know, if there was a religious section in a major bookstore, it would be all Christian books. But that has changed dramatically. Okay, on the internet, you can see evidence of everything I'm showing you. You can check out for yourself. You know, if you tell people this and they're skeptical, you can have them see this on their own. Okay, this is the major witchcraft website. It's called The Witch's Voice, and it's been on since 1997. And in September of 2010, they had 387 million views on this one website. 387 million since 1997. Okay, see the pentagram there on the right? Okay, so this is clearly witchcraft. This isn't just something frivolous. Uh-oh, I went too far. Okay, now, before I went on this trip here, before I came here, I checked it, and now they've had 404 million hits. So that means they're getting roughly 500,000 hits a week on this witchcraft website. 500,000 hits per week. Now that is absolutely incredible. Even if they were getting, let's say, 50,000 hits a week, that would be quite significant. But 500,000 hits a week, I think that would be the population of Winnipeg, right? In 1 week. Okay, mysticism, that's what we're dealing with here. This is a very important part of the talk, because if you don't understand this, you might have a tendency to dismiss the whole phenomenon, because to most people that are not really aware of this or understand it fully, it's silly. You know, it's kind of like ridiculous or far-fetched or hard to believe, because, you know, it's so unconventional. We're dealing with the supernatural, and a lot of people don't even believe in the supernatural. They think it's just fantasy or fiction. And we're dealing with the phenomenon of mysticism, okay? Excuse me. Okay, a non-mystic, we would be non-mystics, hopefully. A non-mystic is somebody who operates in the realm of ideas, intellect, the conscious mind, reason, and rationalization. And that's how traditionally people have approached Christianity, by reading the Bible, understanding its precepts, and having faith. You know, it's intellectual, okay? A mystic operates in the realm of altered states of consciousness, or trances, having employed some technique to get in touch with a supernatural force or power. That's one thing I have to emphasize here. This is not the result of just hearing somebody say something and believe it. This is direct contact with the supernatural or supernatural power. And we're going to be covering that over the next 3 days, you know, the supernatural aspect of this phenomenon. This is touchy. There we go. The practice of meditation. Now, that word meditation, traditionally, it is meant just to think deeply, you know, just to think about things, just to ponder things. And, of course, we all meditate in the old sense of the word every day. You know, whenever you think about anything for any length of time, you're meditating on that subject. But the type of meditation we're talking about here is just the opposite. This is the type of meditation that puts you in altered states of consciousness, where your thinking process has been turned off. Okay? The universality of meditation. See, those of you who like to cook, when you put the right ingredients together and bake it or fry it or cook it for a length of time, it's supposed to always come out the same, right? Yeah, and that's called, what was it again? Those two C's. My mind just went blank. Yeah, continuity and conformity. There we go, the two C's, continuity and conformity. Okay, continuity means no matter how far back you go, you get the same result. Say you've been cooking a casserole for 40 years, You know, it always, if you do it the right way, it always turns out the same. That's continuity. Okay, conformity means it's always the same. You know, something is, if you do it a certain way, it always has the same result. And that's what we see with mysticism. You know, people that have been meditating in this way for centuries and across the world always have the same experience, which means that it's not silliness. It's not just their imagination, that they actually are getting touch with a supernatural power. You know, somebody may say, ah, it's just their imagination. No, no. There's continuity and conformity, which means there actually is a second party. Okay, this is from Alice Bailey's book, who coined the term New Age, which we're going to get to shortly. We found that these illuminated men, right down the ages, testify to the same truth that they claim for this universal method, that it brings them certain results. First, they receive direct experience of divine realities, of transcendental truths, and of the supernatural world. So in other words, that's what we're seeing in all these books, magazines, all these 60 shelves. By the way, did I tell you how many shelves there were? 60? Usually 60 at a Borders. And in some Borders, it's up to like 80 or 90 shelves devoted to New Age spirituality. You know, like if it's a university town, like in Oregon and Eugene, University of Oregon has 90 shelves devoted to New Age spirituality. So anyhow, Alice Bailey said that this is a universal method, and if you do it, you will always come out with the same understanding of the supernatural world. Okay, the purpose of meditation is, like I said, to transcend the physical world and enter this supernatural realm. Meditation is the doorway between worlds, the pathway between dimensions. Meditation is the key, the indispensable key to the highest states of awareness. Now, traditionally, not that many people in the Western world have meditated. It's been, by the way, did you know the word occult means hidden or kept secret? These practices have always, for centuries, have been very much hidden from the average person. You know, they've been only for a select few, only for a small group. And the average person was unaware of these. That's what the word occult means, hidden or kept secret. And also, it also has the meaning that these dimensions were secret. You know, they're there, but you don't know they're there. But now things are changing. Now meditation is being pushed everywhere. Meditation. How many of you have opened just a regular magazine or been looking through the Sunday paper or something, and you see a picture of somebody meditating? You know, it's quite common, isn't it, now to see somebody in the lotus position going like this? And we're going to get to that pretty soon. Okay, this experience of meditation. One starts by silencing the mind. For many, this is not easy. But when the mind has become silent and still, then it is then possible for the divine force to descend and enter into the receptive individual. First it trickles, and later it comes in waves. And this is what we're seeing now, folks. We're seeing millions of people in the Western world having this experiencing, this so-called divine force is entering them and changing the way the Western world perceives spirituality. Okay, how does meditation work? Well, the most common one is called the mantra, and we're going to look into this in the next few days, or next couple of days, about mantras. A mantra is saying a word or phrase over and over again. It can be one word or it can be a number of words, and you just keep repeating it. You keep repeating it and focusing on it, and then you go into an altered state or alpha state by doing this, and that is the most common way of practicing meditation. Another one is focusing on the breath. You just concentrate on your breathing, and your breathing acts like a mantra. And then with shamanic type spiritual practices, they use the percussion sound, like a drum or a rattle or even the sound of, you know, clapping or whatever, just a constant percussion sound. You focus on it, and you can't think because, you know, your thoughts can't flow because you're just thinking, or not thinking, but you're concentrating on that one word or phrase or breath or whatever. And this is going to be the spirituality of the age of Aquarius. That the term New Age is a term from astrology, and it's a reference to the astrological age of Aquarius, in which all of humanity will be doing this. Every person in the world, supposedly, will be meditating and getting in touch with this supernatural force or the divine that they experience coming in waves. And this is why the rise of this kind of spirituality is so important in understanding the end of the age or the tribulation period, because they firmly believe that the age of Aquarius is now coming into full sway and that this will be the religion that supplants Christianity. The age of Aquarius. A mystical revolution is now here. You know, it's not something that's coming, it's here now. It's right here. Right here in 2011, it's not off in the future. And we're going to look at some of the ways in which this mystical revolution is promoting itself. Okay, yoga. Okay, the word yoga means union. That's what it literally means, is union. And most people think that yoga, most people that don't know about yoga think that it's like exercising. It's merely, exercises that are supposed to free up your muscles, you know, make you more limber, make you more healthy, you know, fitness. Yoga has been marketed in the West as a fitness program. But the word yoga, as it says here, means union. Well, union with what? Okay. Union with God. And the asanas or the exercises are only supposed to limber you up so you can meditate better. But they're not yoga itself. Okay, this is the spiritual philosophy behind yoga. This is from a book called Yoga and the Quest for the True Self, written by a man named Stephen Cope, who's a yoga teacher. And he says, we are all born divine. And this is what anyone who is involved with yoga would tell you. We are all born divine. This is the classic statement of the perennial philosophy of yoga. What we are seeking is already at the core of our nature. We are already inherently perfect. It means that God is available fully at each moment simply because God is our true nature. Now, not everybody who is involved in yoga gets into the spiritual aspect. I think I've read that about one in three people that do yoga go on to embrace this kind of view, that we are all inherently perfect and that God is our true nature. But one-third of millions of people are doing yoga, and one-third is quite a number, quite a number. Okay, this is Time Magazine. They did an article on yoga. Can you all read that? It says the science of yoga. So yoga isn't a religion, it's a science. Okay, now we're going to see what the science of yoga is and how it pertains to another religious viewpoint or spiritual viewpoint. Okay, this is a magazine called Fit Yoga. This is a magazine on fitness. This is not a religious magazine. This is a magazine on how to be more healthy in your life. And notice, excuse me, at the top left, it says, energize your life. Everybody see that? Energize your life. Well, how do you energize your life? Now, everybody wants more energy in their life, right? Don't you? Okay, well, how do you energize your life? Well, this is how you do it. And this is from page, I think, 58 of that magazine. This is taken directly out of that article in that magazine. And you see, this is a Hindu picture here, a Hindu painting or whatever. And these little things you see going up the person's body there are called chakras. And that's a Hindu word, and it means wheel. The word chakra means wheel. And this is why I want you to pay very close attention, because this is why yoga, practicing its spiritual essence, can never be compatible with Christianity. It can never be compatible with what the Bible teaches. Okay, this is how yoga works. Okay, you've seen the poses they do where they kind of go like this. Okay, those are called asanas, and they are supposed to limber you up, get your muscles stretched so you can meditate, you know. And this is a picture of a person, or not an actual person, but a painting of somebody meditating. And as you're meditating, this energy called the kundalini energy, I know this sounds silly, but like I said, conformity and continuity, you know, this is a universal experience for thousands of years about people who practice yoga. And it doesn't matter whether you're a housewife from Winnipeg or some guy sitting in a cave in the Himalayas. You know, there's a uniformity of experience here. So, you know, I know that this sounds completely silly when you're on the prairies of Manitoba, you know, but this is what millions of people are experiencing. So you meditate, and these chakras start to, you feel this fiery energy going up your body, up your spine, and as it goes up, these chakras are activated, and when it hits the top, then you know that you're God. The seventh one, the top one, the top two are the ones that are incompatible with Christianity, because the sixth one, when that one opens, you have psychic powers. And when the seventh one opens, then you know that you're God. Okay, this is from that magazine. The seven major chakras each correspond to a particular aspect of human awareness. The seventh chakra, Shahasa, the crown chakra, represents one being truly open to their spirituality and to their own divinity. So yoga has been one of the major catalysts for New Age spirituality in the Western world over the last 20 years. And yoga is virtually everywhere. Okay, now we're going to see what yoga is compatible with. This is Buckland's Complete Book of Witchcraft. And you might think that, wow, this book's really scary and creepy. When you look in there, you'll hear about people sacrificing babies and people in black robes and upside-down crosses, right? That's what you expect to find, right? Well, no. In what you're about to see are excerpts from Buckland's Complete Book of Witchcraft, and what you find are the chakras, the very same thing you find in Fit Yoga and any other book on yoga. You can go to any bookstore here in Manitoba and find books on yoga, and you will find the essence of yoga is the chakra system. And in Buckland's Complete Book of Witchcraft, the essence of witchcraft is the chakra system. See, has the same chakras, the crown and all that. This is from the Complete Book of Witchcraft. And in the book it says, in meditation, the mysterious psychic energy can be sent up through these centers. This very potent force is called the Kundalini or serpent power. That's what Kundalini means, is the serpent power. And as this mighty force begins to flow within you, these vital psychic centers, the chakras begin to open in successive order. Okay, let me see here. These are Canadian yoga statistics. I wanted to show that this isn't just some kind of a California fad, you know. A 2005 study shows that 5.5% of Canadian adults, or 1.4 million people, now practice yoga, an increase of 15% from the prior year. And of the 1.4 million Canadians now practicing yoga, the fastest growing segment is the 18 to 34 age group. Okay, also at the bottom, another 2.1 million Canadians, or 1 in 12 non-practitioners, say they intend to try yoga within the next 12 months. Now, if that's true, 3.5 million people are either doing it or want to do it. That means if each one has 10 family members or relatives, virtually every family in Canada will be impacted by somebody doing yoga. So I wanted to share that with you. So this is not something that you might, you know, find only in Vancouver or Toronto or someplace like that. This is very pervasive. Okay, I only got 15 minutes, so I have to run. I was yakking too much. So anyhow, meditation for the masses. Meditation is being marketed as stress reduction. You know, in time, most of the people that get into meditation now are getting into it for stress reduction. I went to the clinic. I've been fighting a virus here, so I went to the clinic here in town yesterday, and I'm sitting there, and they're on the little screen they have there. They're promoting meditation and yoga on the screen, and I'm sitting there going, "Wow, you know, that's what I'm going to be talking about tomorrow." And they're saying meditation is good for you. You know, meditation reduces stress. Well, I have to kind of move along here, but this is called Ambush by Spirituality. This man, Marty Kaplan, he bit his fingernails. You know, he had a habit of biting his fingernails, so the doctor said he should meditate. So he says, "I got more from mind-body medicine," that's meditation, "than I bargained for. I got religion." He says, "Unwittingly, I was engaging in a practice that has been at the heart of religious mysticism for millenniums." And he says, meditation is known to every mystic tradition. So this guy became a New Ager just because his doctor said that he should meditate to stop his nail biting. Okay, here we have a 5-year-old girl meditating. So it doesn't matter what age you are. Okay, now this is, I want everybody to get this. Like I said, clinic here in Winkler yesterday, I'm sitting there waiting to have my chest x-rayed, and I'm seeing stuff on how you should meditate in the clinic on the board there. You know, it's being pushed in Winkler. And this is what the Beginner's Guide to Mediumship says. Meditation is the key to unlocking the door of mediumship. I gotta get closer here. For without meditation, there is no mediumship. And then he goes into talking about emptying the mind, and that's the type of meditation you would get, you know, in the medical field now, is emptying the mind type. If you continue the flow of uninterrupted trance, spirit contact and visions can occur. So in other words, the type of meditation that is being promoted in the medical field is a type where you empty your mind. And this book here is saying that meditation is the key to unlocking the door to mediumship, which is what the religion of the New Age is all about. Okay, young adult section of Borders. Okay, this is for teenage kids, usually mainly girls here, teenage girls. And we find books like this, Once a Witch. You know, these are 15, 16, 17-year-old girls. This is the predominant theme now in the bookstores for young teenagers. Once a Witch. Okay, hold it. Okay, The Dark Rising, Sweep. Okay, what is Sweep about? Okay, this is these are all novels, basically. Morgan Rollins never thought she was anything other than a typical 16-year-old girl. But when she met Cal, the captivatingly handsome coven leader, she makes a discovery that turns her whole world upside down. She is a witch. Okay, The Necromancer. You know, necromancy is contacting the dead. Witch Child. You know, this girl has a heritage as a healer and a pagan. Okay, hold it. Hold it. Wick. What's going on? Witch Child. Okay, Wicked. This book is about dark legacy of witches and secrets. Okay, Lady Gaga, the world's biggest pop star. Okay, she's into New Age spirituality. In an interview in July 2010 issue of Rolling Stone magazine, Lady Gaga reveals that Deepak Chopra is one of her teachers. Now, Deepak Chopra is a guy we're going to get into a little bit. When is that? Probably Saturday. You know, he's one of the major New Age leaders there is. He sold 20 million books. And Deepak Chopra is one of her teachers, okay? In the July 2010 issue of Vanity Fair, she revealed she had spiritual guides. Okay, Lady Gaga. I know what you're saying, that, well, you expect Lady Gaga to be in the New Age, right? I mean, what else would she be in? You know, she wouldn't be, you know, a Mennonite, right? But I hope I don't get lynched, you know, in this next one here. But I found out something that was quite shocking here a couple of months ago. And hold on to your hats, or hold on to your seats, or whatever. I found out Glenn Beck has New Age spiritualities. Yeah, he put out this book called The Seven Wonders, he said, my father's granola, hippie, New Age spirituality, which I actually agree with. And then he goes on in the book, that's the cover, to say, if God is everything and is in everyone, then I figured he had to be in me too. That's Glenn Beck himself. And see, nominally he's a Mormon. You know, he's only a Mormon because he married a Mormon. He was raised a Catholic, but his dad, you know how it is, and people marry people and then they become their religion, you know, just because they have to. Well, Glenn Beck's dad married Glenn Beck's mom, and she was a Catholic. And Glenn Beck's dad was a New Ager. And so, you know, he was just nominally raised Catholic, and then he married a Mormon woman, and he's nominally a Mormon, but this is his real spirituality. And he says, I was part of God's plan, and I had to respect that plan, or at least not resist it. I had to respect myself as part of him, you know, and not like partakers of the divine nature like Christianity, but, you know, being actually part of God. And this is his co-author. I can't remember his name. Let's go back here. Just somebody asked you. Keith Ablow. Keith Ablow. This is him writing now. This is the guy that co-wrote the book. And obviously, Glenn Beck has to agree with him because they're co-authors. There have been saints and mystics throughout history that speak of an essential nature that indwells humanity. That would be the divine nature. Buddhists call it the Buddha nature. Hindus call it the self, capital S, or your higher self. Sufis, Muslim mystics, call it the hidden essence. Our goal in life should be to evolve and realize this essential nature. Now, this is what Alice Bailey could have wrote, or Deepak Chopra, anybody like that. So it goes from Lady Gaga to Glenn Beck. You know, it's amazing. So Matthew 24:24, for there shall arise false Christs and false prophets, and shall show great signs and wonders, insomuch that it were possible, they shall deceive the very elect. You know, deceive the very elect, if it were possible. So that means this deception that Jesus is talking about is going to be a very good deception. It's not going to be some kind of a deception you can just see through real easily. It's going to be something that's going to suck a lot of regular people in. Okay? So from where does this view originate? Okay? I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. That is Lucifer talking. Lucifer says, I will be like the Most High. Any supernatural power that makes you think that you are like the Most High is from Satan. It's as simple as that. You know, no debate. No debate. I shall be like, he didn't say I will be the Most High. He said I shall be like the Most High. Okay, Leviticus 19:30. And this is one of my, the verses that I stand on or use. Regard not them that have familiar spirits, neither seek after wizards to be defiled by them. I am the Lord your God. All these people we've been seeing, these people that are indwelled by is from these, you know, spirits, spirit guides, are basically what wizards are. The word wizard means knowing one, a knowing one. And if you're, once you're indwelled by them, you're defiled by them. You're defiled. And I think that's what we're seeing. The New Age movement is defiling millions of people to where they think they don't need the cross of Christ. They don't need the preaching of the cross. Because verily, verily, every man, Psalm 39:5, every man at his best state is altogether vanity or empty, emptiness. Even those people that are, you know, the best people there are, you know, the people that are really, really wonderful people are still vanity. Because God knows the heart. God knows what's inside everybody. We don't, but he does. Uh-oh. For the preaching of the cross is to them that perish foolishness, but unto us which are saved is the power of God. And I think it's apparent that we have two completely different belief systems at odds here. But as many as received him, that's Jesus, he gave them the power. Oh, the T is missing. I'm sorry. He gave them, oh, hold it. To them gave he power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe on his name. Even to them that believe on his name. You know, once you can have a connection to God, but it's only through faith. You know, it's only through believing the gospel. And once you do that, then you become the sons and daughters of God. But you're not born that way. You're not born with this hidden divine nature. This is doctrines of demons. The preaching of the cross versus the preaching of the higher self. That's what it comes down to. We're going to be looking at this over the next couple of days. We got large numbers of people preaching the gospel of the higher self, and then we're standing up for the preaching of the cross, right? Amen? And that's what this conference is about, you know, trying to equip you and give you the tools you need to fight this fight and engage in this battle successfully. Okay, thank you very much.